Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is John R. Dario. Mr. Dario is currently the chairman and chief executive officer of Condor Capital. Previously, Mr. Dario co-founded Park Place Capital in 2001, sold that business to Amerquest Mortgage Company in 2002. After the sale, the name of the business changed to Sprint Funding Corp, and John remained with Sprint as president, general counsel through May 2006. John founded Encore Credit Corp, a national wholesale residential mortgage banker. Mr. Dario received his Juris Doctorate and Master's from USC and his Bachelor of Arts degree cum laude from Harvard. And somehow in his spare time, he managed to become a fifth-degree black belt in Taekwondo. Mr. Dario, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
During the boom years, when subprime loans and stated income loans were being approved left and right, did you, as a lender, have a moment when you thought, you know, this might not turn out well?
Yes and no. And the reason why I give you such a response is to be clear as to would it turn out well for whom. At the time when we were originating those loans, when I say we, at the various companies that you mentioned, Encore Credit Corporation being the largest such entity, Encore was probably one of the nation's largest subprime wholesale originators, at its peak originating well in excess of 10,000 loans per month. We're selling those loans at, in hindsight, fairly substantial profits. Encore, in fact, we formed a real estate investment trust that we took public in February of 2005, called ECC Capital Corporation. So a lot of the information about the profitability on selling those loans. But with respect to wisdom of making those loans being defined as what are acceptable default ratios and loss severities, that's where, yes, the short answer now, I was concerned even then about what the effect would be on default ratios and loss severities for the types of loans we were originating. But we originated them because we were getting paid handsomely to originate those loans.
And who was the buyer of the loan? So that was Wall Street?
Wall Street, yes. We at Encore, as well as at several of our competitors, many of the larger loan originators that you would recognize, whether they were subprime or prime, were most of those loans in those days were being securitized.
Right.
And then also there were a few whole loan sale transactions, but the securitization market is what really fueled it.
Did, while you were in the midst of creating the subprime loans, did you have a pretty good grasp of what a CDO was or a credit default swap, or was that something that in hindsight that you learned and figured out?
No, I would say we did have a pretty good grasp on what all those products were that were being created at the time. The collateral debt obligations, the default credit swaps, and things like that. I remember actually at the time with my background as an attorney reading it, and I could tell you it was difficult to track the cash flows and, you know, how those obligations actually worked. But yes, I would say, you know, we had a pretty good grasp on how it worked.
One of my favorite reads as recently has been The Big Short. So I have to ask, did you participate in the on the opposite side of it as far as placing some bets against the outcomes of the, you know, the pools and that type of thing?
No, actually, I did not. At the time when we were originating the loans, and even though we suspected, and in hindsight, we were dead on, that there would be a corresponding increase in default ratios and loss severities. I could say for myself, and I think for many of the people that I work with, we never even remotely imagined the magnitude and the speed with respect to the mortgage market and the real estate market would crash. Had it not collapsed with the speed and magnitude that it had, I don't believe that those shorts would have been worth what they were worth.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, in reading that book, it seemed like it all literally happened in something like maybe a 7 to 10 day period, where they went from being not so worth very much and then they were worth a fortune. So it wasn't a very comfortable investment, that's for sure. Well, let's get up to today. Condor Capital, when did you open for business?
Opened the doors for business in July of 2007 as Condor Capital Corporation.
Okay, and currently the approximate number of people working there?
We have just under 500 employees currently.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And the basic business, what is it that you do?
The basic business is we are and have a reputation and are told by many of our sellers, we are the premier purchaser of non-performing loans secured by 1 to 4 family residences. We're also told that we are the country's most frequent and largest buyer of these loans, which I think, since we have only bought several thousands of these loans, and I believe that there are several millions of these loans available, that this is a very, very fragmented and immature market.
That's interesting. Do you see some of the bigger companies looking at this space saying, look at that, I think that's an interesting model we're going to pursue?
I wouldn't say necessarily that I see a lot of larger companies saying that they're going to pursue it, but I think they're looking at it. And the reason why I say that is I think that a lot of those entities rightfully are concerned about, can they participate in this sector profitably? Servicing defaulted mortgage loans secured by 1 to 4 family residences, especially hyper-defaulted loans, which I would define as being behind at least 6 months in payments, is not an easy business. The two aspects that make it very, very difficult, I believe, is A, truly valuing what the underlying value of the home is today and what that value would be if and when you ever took title to that home as part of the resolution of the delinquency of that loan. And then secondly, how do you effectuate a liquidation of that asset, the asset being the non-performing loan, profitably and in accordance with the morass of rules and regulations that exist today and are being compounded today as every day goes by. So I think a lot of those entities are justifiably reticent in entering into this space.
So it takes considerable expertise. It's not just the ability to write a check.
I fully agree, and there have been in the short 3.5 years that I've had Condor Capital Corporation, we have seen some fairly sizable entities enter and exit the market because they had simply the ability to write the check but didn't dot the I's and cross the T's and figuring out exactly what they were going to do once they owned the loans and or took over the servicing.
When did you buy your first sizable portfolio, and how many loans was in that pool?
I would define sizable portfolio as several hundred loans, and we purchased that toward the end of 2007.
2007, that was a very volatile time frame. So you've got to have a hold time that would have extended into 2008, and prices, at least in the county where I live in, Riverside, probably were descending between a 3% and 4% clip a month. So how do you calculate what something, you know, calculating what something's worth today might be very different from what it's worth 6 months from now when you exit. So how is it that you accomplish a profit?
Several things you brought up that the short answer to your question, how do we accomplish that is that you must accurately predict what the liquidation value would be of that asset at the time of its liquidation. So if the liquidation strategy is to get title to the property and then rehabilitate it and sell it, is being able to have the systems and manpower in place to make an accurate prediction. At Condo Capital Corporation, I'm very proud to report that historically, and we've done into the five figures of loan resolutions over these past 3.5 years. When we analyze what houses actually sell for after whatever that time period is, in places like California, it could be, as you say, about 6 months later, or in places like New York, it could be up to 2 years later, we have been off less than 1% in determining what that price is. We are very, very good in spending the right amount of time and efforts in analyzing the collateral as well as the situation about the borrower. 6 out of 10 times we pay borrowers a substantial amount of money for a deed in lieu of foreclosure so that we can accelerate those timelines, meaning that we get that deed, we buy a loan, we take over the servicing, we get title to the house via a deed in lieu of foreclosure very quickly, so that this way we can get it rehabilitated and then on the market very, very quickly. Also, one of the things is with rare exception, we never put a house on the market unless it's in turnkey condition. Turnkey being defined as the investor not having to put any money into the property in order for it to be lived in. So whether it's an end user, somebody buying the house for them to live in it themselves, or an investor that's planning on flipping it, everything works. You turn on the faucet, the water comes out, the roof doesn't leak, the walls are painted, the closet doors slide on their tracks, windows close and open, things like that.
Okay. How often are these large pools available?
Throughout 2007, they were pretty rare. Most of the sellers in 2007 were, or at least that we were able to successfully buy, where the bid and the ask would cross, meaning what sellers wanted and what we were willing to pay, was typically with warehouse lenders. Warehouse lenders who provided financing to loan originators. The loan originator went out of business, and or the loan originator was unable to sell the loans in the normal course as they had previously. The warehouse lender would then seize those loans as the collateral for their warehouse loans, and warehouse meaning that the loans were boarded in a fictitious warehouse is where that term comes from. So we bought a lot of loans in 2007 from those warehouse lenders. In 2008, a lot of those warehouse lenders cleared their inventory, and then we started buying mostly from Wall Street firms. Again, the Wall Street firms had a lot of these loans at the time because the securitization market was starting to disappear, and so they were selling the loans as whole loans rather than securitizing it. In 2009, there was a greater amount of loans available. The Wall Street firms basically finally got rid of them, and most of our purchases were from large and regional banks. In 2010, which was by far the most prolific year in terms of the availability of these loans, I would estimate that there were several billion, potentially $20 to $25 billion of unpaid principal balance of these loans at least were, we saw available for purchase, and most of those were coming again from regional and large banks, or the Wall Street firms were getting involved in the market again by buying directly from the banks and then arbitrating the process, meaning that they would buy from the banks because of their relationships and then sell them to people like us.
I think it's interesting that if you talk to an REO agent who is getting a fair amount of volume in 2008, let's say, I know an agent that had about 1,000 listings going on at all times, and in 2010 he has 100. So his business is down by 90%, and 2010 for you was prolific. So it's an interesting combination. You really have maybe lenders making a new decision, as opposed to taking them down through the foreclosure process one at a time.
Well, I would have two comments to that. First is the number of realtors that are out there selling REO has grown, I don't know whether it's exponentially, it might just be arithmetically, but I mean the number of realtors that I could tell you that solicit my company to be able to get listings has grown, at least for me, exponentially. I mean, we get literally thousands of realtors that contact Condor Capital Corporation to be on our lists available for listing REO. The second aspect is in 2009 was really the genesis of the federal government and a lot of state governments' efforts to literally delay foreclosures, either through programs like HAMP, the Affordable Home Modification Program of the federal government, or various state programs to force owners of loans to modify them to keep borrowers in the house, which from my perspective is always an interesting analysis, because as an owner of loans, I'm always going to make the economic decision that provides me the best return in terms of time and net revenue, and don't need a government intervention to tell me to modify a loan if indeed the value of that modified loan is greater than what I would get with other alternatives like foreclosure. Mm-hmm. But what I've said publicly, and I'll say here again, is that many of these programs, like the HAMP program of the federal government, that they're formulas that are dictated for valuing the modified loan is fallacious. The value of a modified loan is what a ready, willing, and able buyer would pay for that loan at the time it's modified, and not a very, very, very extensive multivariant calculus formula that the government, the Department of Treasury, has come up with for valuing that loan. So I think what has happened is that, with reference to your original observation, that there are fewer REO available to individual agents, is that there has been a tremendous delay in foreclosures, and therefore a lot of these houses becoming REO, which I think has been referred to as the shadow inventory that exists out there. I personally believe that the dam will burst, whether it will be in 2011 or beyond, that there are literally millions of homes that are going to come on the market as REO when finally the owners of those loans have the ability to take a course of action that maximizes the value for the loan owner. In those situations,
I guess from an amateur's viewpoint, which I would say I am in the world that you're dealing in, I would have thought that the lenders were not really making individual decisions, but it was sort of being dictated by government policy. So I'd love to have your input on that.
Yeah, I would say that that's part of the problem with a lot of the loans and their servicers. Our listeners may not understand that there are two key parties involved with a loan, the owner of the loan and the servicer of the loan. And unfortunately, there's conflicting interests many times between who services the loan. In other words, the entity to whom the borrowers make their payments and the entities to whom the borrower with whom they can communicate with to try to figure out other alternatives when they're in default, and the owner of the loan has the economic interest in its outcome. So because of that dichotomy, many servicers, especially some of the larger servicers, don't do an individual loan-by-loan analysis where my company, Condor Capital Corporation, is, if not unique, a member of a very, very elite few that look at loans truly on an individual and meticulous basis. To give you an example, my asset managers, which are the what we call the people that our borrowers deal with, when we send out our notices to borrowers, who do you deal with, or you know, what's the contact information? It's the asset manager, and our asset managers have a maximum of 50 assets per asset manager. Many other servicers, I've heard it's in the hundreds, if not in the low four figures, mm-hmm. which is bewildering to me, because I don't understand how those, whether they call them asset managers, collectors, or whatever at these other servicers, can make individualized decisions. So full circle to your initial question, I believe there are some servicers that are making macro or decisions across a pool of loans as opposed to individual loans. But every loan is individual. Every borrower situation is unique. Every house is unique. So I believe that, and I'm hopeful that eventually the government and others will understand that the overall resolution of this real estate challenge and mortgage challenge, credit challenge that we have today, is that the loans really need to be approached on a loan-by-loan basis.
You used an interesting term, hyper-defaulted, which probably is the majority of the people in default. We definitely know people that have been behind 2 or 3 years and they haven't even had a notice of default filed. And I guess one of my thoughts was, back in the 90s downturn, there were lenders that were not too interested in foreclosing. And as I recall, the FDIC actually came over the top and said, you can't do that. If they're late 100 days, you have to file. And I guess that was why, when I didn't see that being demanded, I looked at it as a very different situation, where the lenders were being carte blanche. You can do whatever you need to do to survive, including mark-to-market rule changes. So looking at that, I was thinking that this is definitely being handled very differently this time, to where it looked to me like lenders were going to have the option of taking this out for years, and in some cases they have.
I'll make a general and potentially bold comment that I believe that what you've just stated, which I would translate or put in my own words, that the government, instead of allowing the owner of the loan to maximize their economic recovery, is now the government is trying, in my opinion, to do many things to keep borrowers in the home. I believe it's political, because today in 2010 versus 1990, or the late 80s, early 90s, there appears to be such a greater concern for politicians to get reelected. I mean, politicians have always wanted to get reelected, but there seems to be such a greater issue today about supporting an owner of a loan to make the what I would say is correct, and by virtue of the loan documents, the legally available decision to maximize the recovery, as opposed to just keeping borrowers in the house. And what I've stated, and I've met with various government officials, I've been in Washington, D.C. many times, I've dealt with state regulators on this issue. My theory is that there are many borrowers that have either too much loan or too much house, and that the efforts of the government in the 1990s and 2000s to increase home ownership, and the way, as a lender, where we were mandated to increase home ownership and to extend the ability for people to get loans, the way we did that was by loosening underwriting guidelines. And therefore, you've got a lot of people that got loans that, you know, today you could look over on a Monday morning quarterback type of approach and say they really should have never gotten those loans.
I'd agree completely. We're down to our last 40 seconds in our first segment. Just one other quick question before we go. What would be the geographic scope of this list that you usually, this pool? Are you dealing with national lists constantly?
Yes, across
okay.
the entire country.
Okay. We'll pick it up there. John Dario has been our guest. He is the executive officer, chief executive officer of Condor Capital, the nation's largest and most efficient large pool buying of loans. And John, we welcome. We're going to look forward to our next meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.